All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled. What episode are we on, Deborah? This is going out for the masses. This is episode 189, maybe?
I think it is 189.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
We are well into our third year of podcasting, right? Is that how you would say it? Or second
year? I believe so. Yeah.
We've done 2 years. We're almost to 3 years. Almost to 200 episodes. We've got over 200 episodes, but some of them are behind paywall.
Yeah.
So you want to know something?
Cheers to that.
Something crazy that's been like some conspiracy podcast drama lately.
Yeah.
There are people out there who do not think that you should be able to make a profit from doing a podcast. It's very strange to me.
Well, let them do what they want. And let
exactly.
Us
know. They're saying like you have a moral obligation to give, since what we're doing is so important, we have a moral obligation to put it out there for free. That's like saying like, well, like a rancher who produces really good, ethically raised, nutritious beef, they should be giving it away for free, even though it costs money for them to produce it, because it's better than what you can get at Kroger.
Kind of the same,
you know, way of thinking, if you put it that way.
Yeah. Illogical. Is that loud in the podcast universe?
A couple different people have said, as people that I don't really listen to, I don't think they have a very good take on anything. So like, but they've been saying it, but yeah, our friend, Ryan from Dangerous World, he went off on it and did a whole episode kind of calling those people out. And I thought it was great, but, we have a Patreon and we've been putting out some good stuff. And we have a new Patreon member named Nicole, I believe. So thank you, Nicole.
Thank you.
And we did an episode last week with Courtney Turner, and I put the first half out for free, and then put the full episode is available on the Patreon. Uh-huh. So $5 a month. You guys should get out there and support the people that are doing the stuff that you like. It may not be us. It's not us for very many people. But yeah, we're out there. Deborah Gets Red Pilled. Patreon.com/Deborah Gets Red Pilled. Other than that, that's the business, Deborah. Okay. You have any business?
Yeah, people put time and effort and do a lot of research.
Yeah, we don't do a ton of research, but some people do. Some people put hours and hours in every week, you know, preparing clips and reading and doing stuff like that. And, you know, I kind of realized early on that I wasn't going to do that because it takes a lot of effort and I didn't have a lot of time. I still don't at the time, you know, have the time to get into all that. But I like doing headlines with you, but we kind of talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
My attention span and the amount I care about what's going on in the news cycle is waning, getting smaller and smaller every day, and realizing that it doesn't matter, realizing that it's there to keep people divided, separated, agitated, anxious, on edge all the time. We're never going to see the stuff we want. We can point out, I can try to dunk on your old ideology as much as possible. We're never going to see Hunter Biden face any sort of justice for having pedophilic images on his laptop. You know, we're never going to see Hillary Clinton perp walked. We're never like, what do you think? What for your side, Donald Trump, we're never going to see anything come of, I mean, what was the deal? 2 weeks ago, he was arrested, and you know, for what's going on now? Are they even talking about it anymore?
Well, now they're talking about the woman that claims he raped her in Bloomingdale's.
Yeah, but you were talking about that a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't heard one single thing about that. So you know, it's never happening. It's just that's meant to separate, to form small groups. All the transgender stuff, it's real. If you got kids, you gotta keep an eye out. I'm real worried about my sister's children because they just sit there and watch TikTok all day. But I mean, just all that stuff. It's just going to be the same every week. We're just going to, mm-hmm. George Santos is going to be back in the news, you know, all this mm-hmm. same crap and nothing's ever going to come. But the stuff that is really interesting to me that I like is kind of what Courtney was talking about. Tavistock, created culture, just all the stuff, these NGOs and think tanks that have been around forever, and the way that they just slowly nudge society towards a different thing, and the way that all that is involved with MK Ultra, mind control, seeing how far that's come, like just these old, you know, I think the original MK Ultra was, you know, shock therapy, overdosing people on LSD, traumatizing children. I think that they had to do all that really rudimentary, primitive, violent stuff to come to the conclusion and get the technology that they have now where they can do it on such a mass scale while keeping people comfortable. That's right. Kind of what right. I think is going on. I think there's a massive case of mind control that's infected the mm-hmm. whole population, every political ideology, everything. And I think I think they're just really, really good at it these days. And I think but all that stuff goes into everything that we're interested in, and especially the true crime stuff. I know that's your favorite, right?
It is. And I just want to say, if you had made this statement, I don't know how far back, let's just randomly say a year ago, I wouldn't have bought it, but I'm buying it now.
What, that, you know? That we're all under a mind control spell?
And it may not be as nefarious as, you know, spiking our water but it's happening.
Yeah.
It's happening.
I mean, the water is spiked. I mean, it's fluorinated most places. You know, what's interesting is that it's not, there is no, apparently that's one of Portland was real proud of that fact, is that they didn't have fluoride in the water.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the actions of the population there beg to differ, because it seems like people are heavily, heavily mind controlled there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think there's so much stuff going on, and it's so hard to pay attention to everything, you know, as far as like the water, the sky, the weather, everything, you know, the food, the media, entertainment, music, culture,
it's all programmed.
Nothing seems you know, I asked Courtney that on the last show at the end. I said, is there anything that you think's organic? And you know, she said on a very, very like, because she's putting together that festival on a small scale, art and music and culture and stuff, she said is organic, but that's got to be a very, very small part of what's actually going on.
Yeah. When it comes to the cultural nudging.
Yeah.
It just came into my head. I would like to learn how rap and hip hop has made, I mean, we can see for ourselves changes in fashion and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
but what that, I would love to hear about what it's intended to do, other than
just as far, you want just hip hop and rap music or everything?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be cool if we could get sort of a weird scenes type book but about hip-hop culture.
Yeah,
probably is. I mean, I know there's tons. We could probably get Mr. Gates on. He's a friend of Billy Ray. No, not Mr. Bill Gates. He's a friend of Billy Ray Valentine. He's a black guy, and he that was kind of his specialty. He used to go on a lot of shows. I've been on a few times with him, and he's a cool dude, and he knows all about that. Hold on, let me pause real quick. Leroy's outside barking. I'm gonna let him in. But yeah, so the hip hop stuff is very interesting, and you can kind of go back to the, 70s, I guess. What do they say is the original hip hop song would be, like, Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight, or something, whatever, like that. And they say that, like, NWA, Death Row Records, and what was the other big record label? Death Row and I forget. There's the one that Eazy-E was on, and then the Death Row was like Dr. Dre and Suge Knight and all that. And they say that was kind of a CIA creation to promote these negative, what it would have become, negative stereotypes for the black community, to kind of weaken that community, because they say before it, hip hop was like super conscious and positive, and so it'd be cool. I can reach out and see if I can find anybody to do that, if that's what you're, if you'd like to do a show just about that.
Kind of curious.
Yeah,
be too. Really interested in knowing what.
Yeah, I mean, we're here. All about. Well, that's the name of the game, Deborah. We're here to wake you up. But so saying all that, guys, we kind of want to maybe move the theme of the show a little bit that way. I don't think we're going to be doing headlines. Maybe every once in a while, if we don't have a show lined up or something, we can get into the headlines. But for now, we kind of want to maybe do some of these more well-known serial killer cases that we think might be related to mind control, stuff that not necessarily, I don't know if all these serial killers were created to be serial killers. I think a lot of them were created to go do stuff in Vietnam and maybe mind programmed to take care of other things. And then it kind of backfired, and then the government had created all these serial killers. So who knows? It's going to be fun to do a dive into that.
Yeah.
And like we said, we just rewatched Jake. I did. I watched Jacob's Ladder.
I didn't get to it this weekend. It's been a kind of a hectic weekend, but yeah, I intend to watch it again.
Yeah. And maybe we can find somebody to talk to us about Operation Phoenix and all that stuff. But just all these old English think tanks, and I've been listening to a ton of Jay Dyer. Like I said, I subscribed to his channel or whatever. It's if you're into this stuff, I mean, I don't think there's anybody better for it, and it's $5 a month, and there's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of stuff about every facet of it, from all these elites and the Bolshevik Revolution to serial killers to everything, and it's all related, in my opinion. So, but we have been reading Program to Kill by Dave McGowan, and I bought that for you for your birthday.
Yes, you did.
Oh, you know what I just realized too, is that I saw, is it Weird Scenes or Strange Scenes? I think it sounds like it should be Strange Scenes, but I think it's Weird Scenes.
Let's see.
Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon is available on Audible now. So you can get it on audiobook. It wasn't for a long time. So, but
program, I think I listened to it before I read it.
Oh, you did?
Or maybe it's the reverse. Because I read it at like 3 years ago or so.
Yeah.
At the start of
our journey.
Pandemic.
So Programmed to Kill is a book by Dave McGowan, and it was written in 2004. And Dave McGowan was a deep researcher. He'd been around for a long time, and he was just kind of a normal guy. He was a general contractor by day, and then he had a construction company. And then he did all this research in his spare time. And it's really good. If you go to the Center for Uninformed or Center for Informed America or something like that. It is his website, and it's still up. I think it is maintained by his daughter. Dave McGowan died, I think, in 2015. From a rapid onset case of cancer. He was a heavy smoker, but a lot of people think that there's some strange stuff around his rapid deterioration and death. So it'd be interesting if anybody would do any research on that as well. We could get into that too. But he's done everything from this stuff, serial killers, to Laurel Canyon stuff. That's probably his most famous book. And then he also had Wag the Moon Doggy, which was a movie that he documentary did on the moon landing. And you want to hear a funny story? Is Buck Johnson, I subscribed to his Patreon, and every month you get to go on like a group chat call with, like, he brings on like a guest who'd been on his show that month. And then everybody that's on his Patreon can go on and do like a 2-hour Zoom chat with him. And there's a guy in there, one of the guys that's on his Patreon that works for NASA. Yeah. And Buck asked him if he's like, "Do you think we went to the moon?" And the guy's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "All right, I'll let you explain why. And then maybe afterwards we'll have Adam come in and tell you why you're wrong."
Very cool. And, shout out.
I wish I could have maintained myself a little better. I think I came off kind of like a dick, but like, it's just you know how it is. It's really easy to disprove. And, but it was funny. And he gave he did the talking. He's gonna say the thing. He did the Bill Nye the Science Guy explanation. It would have been easier to. I was like, why can't we go back? And he said, "Oh, well, it's because the scientists back then were way more talented and smarter guys." And I was like, "Well, why did they
come on?"
And I go, and this guy's like a nuclear physicist or something, you know? And I go, "Well, what happened to the record of everything?" And he's like, "Oh, you know, it was just they were wild men." He's like, "They were just turning and burning. They weren't really keeping track of any of the data or anything like that. A lot of it got lost, and it was just, they weren't recording stuff the same way." And he's like, "If you look at it, it would have been, it's easier to go to the moon than to fake the amount of paperwork that says we did." And that's the Bill Nye science guy. It's the Bill Nye, the science guy explanation. So it was pretty funny. I think I came off kind of like a dick, but I was like, do you know Don Pettit? And he's like, "Yeah." I'm like, you know him? He's like, "I know." He's like, no, I know him. I know of him." And everybody's like, "Who's Don Pettit?" And I was like, that's the mentally retarded guy who's the NASA spokesman, who, in my opinion, believes 100% that he has been in outer space when he's really just been in a room and they told him that he was in outer space.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, that was just kind of a funny story about that. But okay, let's get into Program to Kill. How far into the book are you, Deborah?
100 pages.
Exactly. 100.
Thereabouts. I started the book, and I had to keep rereading the first chapter because I just couldn't hold all that information in my head.
Yeah, and it's not it's not and then, it's not a fun thing to have to keep rereading, right?
No, it is not. It's a lot of pedophilia and stomach turning.
The book is broken up into three parts. Part one is the pedophocracy is what he calls it. Part two is there's something about Henry, and Henry is Henry Lee Lucas. And then part three is, and in other news, dot, dot, dot. So I am well into part two. I think I just finished the part on, I'm over 100 pages in. So the myth of the serial killer, lone nuts. I am not to chapter 12 of Satan's family tree yet. But let's get into, how do you want to do this? You want to go like chapter by chapter?
Sure. You know, I took some notes on some of the stuff that I thought was interesting and pertinent about strictly about Henry Lee Lucas.
Yeah.
But I haven't gotten into like his childhood or in any of that stuff, but just kind of the basic outline of what he did, how he was able to do it, how he was arrested multiple times and released.
Yeah. And then just we'll get there when we get there. So chapter one, he has like a little intro where he talks about mind control and how we're all kind of victims of it. And he kind of talks about like how,
you
know,
there?
Some. Oh, yeah.
Are you frozen? You're frozen.
Okay. Well, okay. Sorry, guys. We're having some technical problems, but we're back. So these computers, I tell you, they get crazier and crazier. We're not to Henry Lee Lucas yet, but the book starts out and he has a little section where he talks about mind control, multiple personality disorder, DID, MPD, DID, which is what, multiple personality disorder, dissociative identity disorder. And then we get to chapter one, and it's called From Brussels. And it gets right into a case that's not that well known in America, but the case of the Belgian beast, Marc Dutroux. And you had never heard of it. And I had not heard of him. Yeah, I mean, I've only heard of it for the past few years, a couple times in passing. You know, on Martyr Made, he does a real good breakdown of it on his Epstein series. But it deals with the case of this kind of low-level scumbag named Marc Dutroux. He's a French-speaking Belgian guy. And lifelong sex offender, right?
Right.
And then he...
Prolific,
yeah. And somehow, you know, just like everything else, skirts the law, goes to prison for these very short sentences for horrific crimes, gets out, and then starts right back up, right out in the open. Somehow this guy, he was like
leaving evidence.
Yeah. He was an unemployed, you know, ex-con, and he owned something like 10 properties in Belgium, and he was building
without income.
Yeah, no income. He had the welfare, you know, which is probably very easy to get in these European countries for anybody. But he was that your dog?
That was Gubby.
Yeah. So he's married. He ends up teaming up with these different kind of guys. And then the thought is that he is, there's this vast network, worldwide pedophile network, and he is procuring children for the members of the elite inside the government, big business, and things like that. He had this house, and he had built like a dungeon in it. He had like contracted some guy out to build a dungeon in it, had like videotape recordings of it that the police had prior to arresting him. They were at one point at his house while these two, I think 8 or 10 year old girls were in. There was no one living in the house, but he just left these two little girls in this dungeon locked up. They eventually starved to death. And there was a locksmith, I think a regular police officer, and then I forget what they called it, but it's kind of their version of the FBI. I forget what they're called.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Special police. And they could hear, the locksmith guy was like, I can hear little girls.
I can hear people down there.
Girls screaming. And they're like, oh, no, that's out on the street.
Yep.
And they were like literally where they were. So they went back with the locksmith and he showed them. Was like 3 feet away from where they were, like behind a wall. And
I mean, it's kind of blatant if you are sent to search a house and you don't search it in entirety. I don't know how hidden that the entrance to the dungeon was, but
yeah, and you hear children's screams and you're with a locksmith, you know. So there's a multiple part podcast on it called Les Monstres. It's pretty boring. It's not a very well done podcast. And, you know, it's one of those housewife true crime podcasts that doesn't get into the conspiracy of it at all. And that's the whole thing. The whole country of Belgium was kind of split in half with these people who are being called, a lot of them, the victims' parents were being called crazy conspiracy theorists because there was so much evidence to show why he had been let off so many times. All these other people that were involved, different leads, all sorts of weird stuff that happened. And, you know, the guy that makes this podcast is an American guy who's living in Belgium at the time. And he kind of is wow. Amongst the people that think, you know, oh, there's no funny business here, just like one crazy psycho, even though he like admits like, oh, it looks like there's collusion, you know, and stuff like that. So go and listen to that podcast if you want.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah.
That's hard to believe though.
Yeah. So that's the first chapter, the Marc Dutroux case. He's eventually caught. He still maintains, I don't think he maintains his innocence the whole way, but he says that he was working within this larger network for procuring victims for,
and, for people. And even his mother ratted on him or told officials about him.
Okay. So we're on chapter two. And it is, chapter two is called ... to Washington. So there's a little quote at the start of the chapter. It says, several prosecutors, policemen, and crucial eyewitnesses have committed suicide. Important evidence has also disappeared. So maybe Dutroux is being protected from on high. What other explanation can there be for such a disgraceful chain of events? Yeah, so the case is just so full of these of suicides, judges being replaced, you know, prosecutors being fired, all the normal stuff, all out in the open. So chapter two is he starts talking about child pornography. And there's some stuff in here that is just unbelievable. I forget what it says, but it says something like all this stuff about there was no real laws against child pornography pre-1990.
Yeah, isn't that hard to believe?
Yeah. I mean, I was 11 years old when that. And then
And there was the technology for it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been porno films since.
Yeah.
Since, you know, if you watch, there's a real good series on Netflix. It's a German series called Babylon Berlin or Berlin Babylon.
Oh,
uh-huh. It's about, you know, Weimar Germany in the 30s. Uh-huh. And it shows them making child corn movies there, you know. And but so like I guess the first laws in 1990, it says, in fact, as recent as 1990, private possession of child pornography was legal in 44 of the 50 states, despite the inescapable fact that all such materials were by necessity illegally produced and or illegally obtained. So as soon as it was made and you got it, it was yours, and there was nothing illegal about it, even though the production of it was probably illegal. And then there's talk about the case that they're kind of alluding to the future, saying that if there is like AI child porn, that they can't rule against it
because there's no children involved.
Yeah. So what are some of these other dates that they get into in here? I think, and then it was like late, it slowly became a little bit more illegal to possess, and then like you couldn't sell it, and then you, but it's much, much later on than you'd expect.
Yeah. And there's a list of numbers, that 20% of children we encounter. This is the a study from the Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children. About 20% of children we encountered in this study are being trafficked nationally by organized criminal units.
Yeah. Yeah, so it says in the 1990s, child pornography was already a $3 billion a year business. That's in 1990. That's wild. So let's see. I made a couple notes in here. Let's see. They talk about these guys, the Dark Brothers. So Tom Junod wrote in Esquire in February in 2001 that the entire culture is besotted with the erotic promise of teenage girls. In 2001, that's like, I think Britney Spears came out, what, 1998?
Could be.
So this is like Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera era. The lure of jailbait now supplies the erotic energy to a popular culture desperate for what's new, what's young, what's alive. The Juno article is, strangely enough, a profile of Greg Dark, one half of the former Dark Brothers, notorious purveyors of dark-themed, occult-tinged porno films.
Mm-hmm.
Dark is rather noteworthy for having openly produced and peddled child pornography, in what many of his films featured a very young Tracy Lords. You remember, yeah. Tracy Lords?
Tracy Lords was a porn star, and she was also in some of John Waters' movies.
Yes, she she became famous because of the scandal around her. She was in porn in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe so up into was... the... But she was 14 when she got in, I think.
Yeah.
And just used a fake ID. and you know, you could still get that stuff out there. And then she, I think she did a couple legitimate of age pornography movies, and then she was in Crybaby.
Yeah, that's a John Waters movie.
Yeah, and then she's been in some stuff throughout the years. Zach and Miri make a porno was a recent, more recent film that she was in. She's old now. She doesn't look the same.
Huh. Well, she's lived a hard life.
Yeah. And it says, oh, it says Tracy, who began working with the Dark Brothers at age 13.
13.
Yeah. That's crazy. Okay, it says, yeah. but Dark has now put those days behind him. He is now working comfortably in the mainstream, and he is no longer marketing teen sexuality. No, now he is creating music videos for Britney Spears.
Yeah.
Britney Spears isn't doing very well these days, you know? Mandy Moore.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just another, well, a more widely accepted version of the same thing.
And it says, and the preteen Leslie Carter, sister of Aaron Carter and Backstreet Boy Nick Carter. So some real bad stuff's come out about this family recently. Yeah. Yeah. Aaron Carter died, right?
And they're saying it was an overdose.
He was not doing good. He had a bunch of face tattoos. He was on bad drugs. But he had told, there's a bunch of stories about Nick Carter coming out as being a rapo.
Yeah.
And like raping like mentally challenged girls on tour and stuff like that. And Aaron Carter talked about that. And then he died in a bathtub, right? I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very, very mysterious bathtub death. We see those over and over and over again. A lot of people think that that's some sort of occult type symbolism.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Whitney Houston dead in the bathtub. Yeah. Her daughter. Did her daughter die or almost died?
She died.
Yeah. Also in a bathtub.
Also in a bathtub, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people think that Whitney Houston thing is some sort of ritual, because they were like party. There was like a party in the hotel room while she was like in there dying.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Crazy. So yeah, and then it also gets into this study that was done. And he's talking about the movement to legitimize sex between adults and children. So this is way back in 2004. So imagine reading this in 2004 and you're just like, come on, Dave.
Impossible. That's isn't going to happen.
And he's he's 19 years before his time, you know? And Stephanie Dallin, researcher for the Leadership Council for Mental Health, Justice, and the Media in Philadelphia, an organization that deals with prevention and treatment of child abuse. Some people view children as the next sexual frontier, Ms. Dallin says. Referenced in the Times article is Judith Levine's Harmful to Minors, The Perils of Protecting Children from Sex. So listen, think about that headline. Harmful to Minors, the perils of protecting children from sex. Not the perils of having sex of with sex. Children.
Yeah, but
the perils of protecting them. Children from sex. Yeah. So this is a pro child sex article published by the University of Minnesota Press. Levine's book endorses a Dutch law passed in 1990 that effectively lowered the age of consent to 12. As the Times article points out, the book is only the most recent in a series of academic arguments for consensual sex involving children. Included among such academic endeavors are, there's a list of bullet points, an article published in 2000 by the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality in San Francisco, in which the authors claimed that there was considerable evidence that there is no inherent harm in sexual expression in childhood. And, you know, that seems like it's a very veiled statement, you know, because kids are maybe going to do some weird stuff with their wieners when they're little. And you could say like, oh, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I touched my BH when I was six because I didn't wanted to know what it felt like. But that's like not what they're really going for. An interview with San Francisco State University professor Gilbert Hurt in the Dutch. So I've heard of this thing before, the Dutch pro pedophilia journal Paedica, in which Hurt stated the category child is a rhetorical device for inflaming what is really an irrational set of attitudes against pedophilia.
I don't know. I mean, you know, we know the brain's not developed. So how can you say that anybody under a certain age is mentally prepared for that kind of encounter or can make a choice for themselves? Who was there's a recent senator who wants to lower the age of consent to 12.
Yeah, I mean, that was a real retarded back and forth between two stupid people. I can't remember what they were talking, and it all came out of some trans argument, like I can't remember what it was, but this Republican guy saying like he knows people that got married when they're 12 and then it was a positive thing because they're still married, but he didn't say that I want to lower the marriage age to 12.
All right.
So, yeah, that's a weird deal. I used to work with this guy, and his mom was 14 when she had him, and his dad was 24.
Oh, boy.
And they were still married.
Oh, boy.
They were married still. Uh-huh. They, like, did it. They made it and had, like, a family and stuff, but it's just like, your dad was a pedophile,
14.
Yeah. And he had like been in prison too before. Yeah. Yeah. And that's where you get like guys like Thaddeus Russell, who wants to have these, you know, boundary pushing talks about the age of consent, where it's not the hill to die on, you know? I understand that there's some debate between 18 years old in one day and 17 years old in 364 days, you know, but
yeah.
And I understand that there might be a difference between a 2-year-old and a 16-year-old as far as pedophilia goes. But I mean, it's still, I don't know. It's a real sticky situation and something that, you know, what's weird is, if you go back and watch a lot like that R. Kelly, Surviving R. Kelly series, in Illinois at that time, it might still be that like 17 is legal.
I don't know. Hmm.
So a lot of those people were like consenting adults according to that state's law.
It just seems so out there to me that it seems to be so prevalent these days. And is it that they're trying to normalize it? Are they trying to, you know, get us so accustomed to hearing and seeing and that it's going to normalize it?
Yeah, I think so, Deborah. I think it's been prevalent in the shadows for a long, long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more and more we get into these, like, I listen to a couple hours of Jay Dyer a day, and like all these English intelligence people and everything, they're all homosexual pedophiles. It's insane. And, you know, it used to be just like you could blackmail people with gayness, and you can't now because that's celebrated. And then pedophilia is still working as they could blackmail people for that. And we saw that. We'll get into the Franklin scandal here in a second and all that, and Epstein. And, you know, judging by the way that that we go from in that cycle, does it mean that this is going to be normalized and you're not going to be able to blackmail people with this anymore? It's going to have to be goats next or something like that. But I mean, we see it. We see there's people out there that want to add the P or the minor attracted persons to the alphabet list, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. So check it out. Another interview with Pydika, that's the Dutch pro pedophile journal, given by John Money, professor emeritus at Johns Hopkins University, that spoke of genuinely, totally mutual sex between adult men and young boys. I mean, look at that Scott Wiener creep from San Francisco. Are you familiar with him?
Scott Wiener.
Remind yeah, he's me. Some. He's some sort of San Francisco politician. Let's look him up here. Let's go to screen share. Share. The picture that'll come up is going to be him in a leather vest at the Folsom Street Fair. What did I say? His name is Scott.
Scott Wiener.
Yeah.
Senator Scott Wiener.
Yep. So let's go to images. Oh, did they scrub the picture? I mean, this guy, like, yeah, see, look. Okay, here is. This is the famous picture of him right here at the Folsom Street Fair. If you guys don't know what the Folsom Street Fair is, it is a gay bondage fair that is held out in the open in San Francisco every year on Folsom Street, where people are encouraged to bring their children and watch guys fillet each other and sodomize each other in broad daylight, you know? And this is Senator Scott Wiener, and he is most famous for this picture in a leather vest and a leather necktie, and also making sex between minors and adults, as long as there's like less than 10 years between them, decriminalized. And that's
I don't know how that one got by me.
Yeah, I mean that one. I think it made it into the law books, Deborah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, here you go. Look at this guy.
There he is. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back to meeting. Okay, so let's keep moving. So that's the second chapter. Was there anything else in here that you wanted to get into? Okay, so I highlighted this. How far does this pedophilic underground extend into the halls of power? Are America's political, corporate, and military elite, like their counterparts in Belgium, Latvia, and Portugal, hiding a particular dirty little secret from the American people? A secret that, if exposed, could shatter America's cherished political and economic institutions and bring the House of Cards crashing down. Okay, so we're going to get into Craig Spence here. Craig Spence is this, we know him from the...
He threw parties, right?
Yeah, he was a Republican. So in the 80s, this was all Republicans doing the pedo stuff. I guess the parties really did switch, like they say. No, because it's everybody now. Craig Spence was a lobbyist, I think. And he
had... Behind the scenes Republican power broker.
Yeah, in Washington. So that sounds like... That's kind of like a lobbyist, right? He's making deals, yeah. Wheeling and dealing. And in June 89, the Washington Times published a story that sent shockwaves rippling across Capitol Hill. It seemed that Spence had been deeply involved in a cowboy ring that supplied young boys, some of them very young boys, to the elite of both political parties, as well as visiting dignitaries. It was reported by the Times that a list of some 200 individual influential clients included the names of government officials, locally based U.S. military officers, businessmen, lawyers, bankers, congressional aides, media representatives, and other professionals, only a few of whom were publicly identified. On the guest list for Spence's parties were former CIA Director William Casey and former Deputy Director of Intelligence Ray Klein, Congressman Barney Frank, and Senators John Glenn and Frank Murkowski. Political activist propagandist Phyllis Schlafly. Are these names ringing a bell with you at all?
Oh, yeah. Everyone
Barney Frank was a real dark guy, I think. Former Attorney General John Mitchell, who once co-hosted a party with Spence. Journalist William Sapphire, Liz Trotta, Ted Koppel, Eric Severide. Former ambassadors James Lilly, Robert Newman, and Elliot Richardson. General Alfred M. Gray, the Commandant of the U.S. Marine Corps, and Lieutenant General Daniel O'Graham, an expert on the Space Defense Initiative, Fake and Gray, and former U.S. attorneys Joseph DeGeneva and Victoria Tonsing. Spence once held a birthday bash for the notorious Roy Cohn, who taught who everything they know. Donald Trump, right?
Yeah, right.
He was his attorney, correct?
I think he was. That's
he
right.
Was a gnarly, yeah. He was a gnarly pedo, and then he was the... He looks like a bad guy. He's a very, very evil-looking guy. And he would represent the mafia and stuff, right?
Yeah, and didn't he... wasn't he in, oh, maybe not. I was thinking he was involved in all the communist conspiracy stuff back in the, like in the 40s and 50s. Was that him too?
No, you're thinking of, what's his
when
name?
When everybody was, you know.
The Red Scare, which was really true. The cross-dresser guy, what's his name?
Right. Yeah.
Not Roy Cohn. Oh man, I'm doing the thing where I can't remember.
We both know who we're talking about, and it'll come to us as soon as we stop trying to think about it.
Yeah, and it says he also boasted playing host to Rock Hudson and other celebrities, and Rock Hudson, famously a closeted homosexual who died of AIDS.
AIDS.
Yeah. So. This is a famous story that you find when you go to when you start looking into the Franklin scandal. Among the revelations in the case was that Spence had taken some of his callboy escorts on private late night tours of the White House. And this was the George W. Bush White House, first Poppy Bush. The tours, of which there were at least four, were cleared by a uniformed security service guard who moonlighted as a bodyguard at Spence's parties. Spence hinted that the tours were arranged. No, not George W. George H.W. Dad Bush. So that's, sorry, my mistake. Spence hinted that the tours were arranged by a national security advisor to then Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush, Donald Gregg, for whom Spence once sponsored a dinner. One of the tours occurred just after Spence stopped by the Nightline studio to see his friend Ted Koppel. So, I think Spence would later be outed for what he was doing, and I think he committed suicide, allegedly.
Yeah, they say he was found.
Yeah.
Found lying in his bed at the Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah. So this, how are we doing on time? We haven't gotten very far. We're almost an hour in. Let's go another little bit and see where we are. We don't have to do the first 100 pages. This might take longer than we thought. So the chapter goes on to get into Craig Spence leads us into the Franklin scandal, which Dave calls the Franklin cover up. And if you guys go back and listen to, I think, episode 4 of our podcast, I exposed Deborah to the Franklin scandal. So the Franklin scandal revolved around the Franklin Credit Union, which was run by, it was a credit union that was marketed to poor black people from the wrong side of the tracks in Omaha, Nebraska. It was run by a up and coming star of the Republican Party, Lawrence King, who was one of the original conservative black guys back before that was a cool thing. He sang the national anthem at like the 1984 Republican convention. He's like an opera singer. And he was running this. Republicans love black guys that can make it look like they're not racist, you know. Democrats like the same thing too.
But he took boys to the White House also.
Yeah, he was the main guy. He was a savage pedophile himself. Like this, I don't even want to talk about it. The stuff that Paul Benassi says that he saw that guy doing is just horrific. They talk about it in Franklin Scandal. It's so terrible. So he was running this this credit union, which had like $4 million worth of assets on it, and he had somehow like embezzled $41 million. He had like a penthouse apartment in Omaha. He had just cars and rings and jewelry, and he had I think some apartments. It might have just been Craig Spence's properties that they used in Washington, D.C., but he was flying in Omaha, Nebraska. There's this place called Boys Town, and it's a famous American institution. There's like an old 40s movie about it, and it's a Catholic, I believe, orphanage. Huge.
Orphanage.
Yeah. There, I remember I used to like, you'd be watching like sports on a Sunday with your dad, and they'd have like commercials for Boys Town on it, and you could donate to it. And so they were getting kids from there, boys, and they were shipping them all over the country to do these kind of Blackstone operations, these pre-Epstein type blackmail things. And he eventually
drugging the boys, you know.
Yeah, like getting them. All these kids are, you know, they're young kids, and they're hooked on drugs, and that's how they'd say, like, oh, if you do a good job at the party tonight, you'll get an extra gram of cocaine. And the most famous boy involved in this is Paul Benassi, and he's still alive somehow. And if you believe what he says, he was just savagely molested and exploited and forced to assault other children that they were bringing in. It's reported by him that when they kidnapped Johnny Gosch, who was the first little boy on a milk carton, who was kidnapped in the Omaha suburbs, he said he was forced to sexually assault him to kind of like bring him into the operation. And there's a really good, well, I don't know if it's really good, but there's a movie on there called it used to be free on Amazon. I think you got to buy it now. It's called Who Took Johnny. And it tells that whole story. It shows his mother, Noreen Gosch, claims that he came back like 10 years later. Came to her house in the middle of the night, like told him that they were, him and some other boy were like on the run, living on Indian reservations and stuff like that. It's a crazy story. And I think some stuff's come out about his father maybe being involved in the whole deal. But I mean, this stuff goes so deep.
Disturbing.
I know, unfortunately, the thing I know like the most about is the Franklin scandal. And if you want a really in-depth overview of it, read Nick Bryant's book, The Franklin Scandal. I think Nick Bryant's doing shows. We could probably get him. I'll reach out. But I read that book. It's hard to read. Goes all the way to the White House. This guy, Lawrence E. King, Black Larry is what they call him. He ended up going to prison, but he went to prison for the money stuff. Go ahead.
And he's free today.
Yeah, last we heard of him, I don't think he's there anymore, but last somebody found him, he was like selling Mercedes at some dealership in Virginia. So the consummate salesman.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Paul Bonosky case is very, very wild. There's a video of him talking about being an MK Ultra kind of I think he said he was trained to be like kind of a mule. There's like people that would say they've been trained to be an assassin, people that would like girls that would be like the sex kittens, like Kathy O'Brien. And then he was kind of like used as like a courier who had like a his brain could remember stuff, I think. And he had like a code number that would switch him into an altar. And there's video of him, of them doing it to him. Yeah, he loses a lot of credibility because he went on to be a pedophile when he grew up. Oh, okay. I'm frozen. Let me pause and wait for Deborah to come.
You're good. Yeah.
Yeah. So
he is now suffering from multiple personality disorder.
Yeah.
Paul Bonosky.
Yeah, because according to him and what he says is that he was MK Ultra and had his personality split, you know? So disassociative, DID, MPD.
Yeah.
Yeah, Philip Fairbanks gets into a lot of this stuff too in his book, The Pedalgate Primer. But the Franklin scandal involved a lot of high power people in the Republican Party, a lot of the social elite in Omaha, Nebraska. It involved the media, the wealthy elite, business owners, law enforcement, and so every base was covered, and all these people were involved in on it. And then this girl, Alicia Owen, who was one of the victims, she testified in court. Her story, they called it perjury, told her if she didn't recant it that she was going to go to prison, and they sent her to prison for like 9 years. And she spent like, I can't remember the exact number, but she was in solitary confinement for like six of it. It's insane. That's
so bad.
So yeah, floating around YouTube, I don't know if you could still get it, Conspiracy of Silence, I believe it was called, and that's
a familiar title.
I think that's what it was. It was going to be A&E, like 1994, A&E was going to put out like an hour or two long documentary about it. And it got pulled. It got yanked like the night before it was supposed to air. It was an English film crew that made it. And you could find it. It's really, really poor quality, but you could find it on YouTube. I don't know. It's probably not up there anymore. Maybe BitChute or Rumble or something, but they go and confront people at Boys Town, and they show that like Boys Town's like a square mile, like the whole thing, the whole campus, and they say it's like the most wealthy square mile in the world per capita, you know. Hold on, Wilma's barking. Now I got to go let her in. Okay, sorry about that. That was Wilma barking this time, so she's inside now. She's outside playing with Bobo. Okay, so let's keep moving. Let's go a little bit more. Let's maybe get through one more chapter. What do you think?
Okay.
We've been going a little over an hour.
And we're on...
chapter three.
Yes.
Uncle Sam wants your children. Oh, this is where it starts getting into, man, this is a dark, dark first just way to kick off this book. You know, he could have hid all this stuff in the middle of the book. Could have done like Charles Manson or something, some happy go lucky, you know, serial killer stuff to get us started. But no, he starts it out.
Yeah, I was quite taken aback when I read the first few chapters. I was going, where's those serial killers?
Yeah.
You promised me serial killers.
Yeah. Chapter three, Uncle Sam wants your children. And it gets into a lot of these sex abuse cases that happened in like government run military childcare facilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course that leads us into the case at the Presidio, which is
McMartin.
Yeah, well, before McMartin, we've got the Presidio case.
Right.
And the Presidio is right by your house, right mm-hmm. across the Golden Gate Bridge, pretty much mm-hmm. underneath the Golden Gate Bridge, right?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful piece of land.
Yeah, and I don't remember the Presidio being an active military base, but no. It was up until the mid to late 80s, correct?
I think so, yeah.
And this case deals with, we first find out about Michael Aquino. And Michael Aquino is the leader of the Temple of Set, a satanic occult church. And he was in a member of the Church of Satan, right?
Right.
That, and he had first become a member of that from, if I can remember, he had gone to see Rosemary's Baby at the movies when it came out in San Francisco, and he saw Anton LaVey and his group of satanic Church of Satan. Is that what it is?
The Church of Satan.
Yeah, he saw those. They were like at the movies passing out flyers or something like that. And he saw them and he said, wow, they look like cool guys. And he became involved with them. In 1975, he splits off, forms the Temple of Set. But the interesting thing about Michael Aquino is he is a high-level lieutenant colonel in charge of military intelligence in the U.S. Army. So he's stationed at the Presidio. There's a child care facility there. And all these kids start ending up showing up with incontinence,
bruising and
STDs.
And STDs.
Yeah. You know, we can keep it short here because it's hard to talk about. All these kids identify him and his wife, Lilith. Of course, her name's Lilith.
Lilith, yeah.
They can identify their house. They identify
talk
some
about
other...
the interior of the house.
And then at the same time, Michael Aquino, he's famous. He's written all these books. I forget what the names are, like Cy Ward. Dean's girlfriend has a bunch of them. But he's like the guy that's in charge of psyops for the
uh-huh.
army.
And part of the Contra guns and cocaine trafficking operation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, let's see. Paul Benassi said that he saw a bunch of handoffs of briefcases full of cash between him and Lawrence E. King. At the same time, he's going around in Satanic Panic. He's going around and he's showing up on like Donahue and Martin Downey Jr.'s show, I think. Definitely Donahue. And he would like spike up his eyebrows into like little horns. You can see that if you go up on YouTube too. You can type in Michael Aquino and Donahue. And in my opinion, he was kind of paraded around as kind of like this satanic clown, even though he was a high level guy, to kind of feed into that thought that maybe this whole satanic panic is just not real and not something that we need to take seriously. So, so he's on TV all the time, and all these other little kids in different military bases who are in childcare there are like recognizing him, saying like, "Oh, yes, you know, that's a guy that molested me." Here's some stuff about let's see. Aquino owned a building in Marin County, your hometown, your home county, inherited from his mother, Betty Ford Aquino, that was jointly leased to the Marin County Child Abuse Council and Project Care for Children. The stated purpose of Project Care was, interestingly enough, to assist parents in locating daycare for their children.
Perfect.
As disturbing as the Presidio case was, it was just one of many ritual abuse cases directly tied to one or more branches of United States Armed Forces. So, you know what's interesting about this book and Dave McGowan's research is that he quotes the San Jose Mercury News quite a bit. So I know I asked you about this before, but at some point they were like telling the truth, apparently. Now they're probably owned by Google.
Or Murdoch.
Yeah. But it says, as the Mercury, so San Jose Mercury News was kind of what, like,
yeah, they were kind of all over it.
Yeah, but they were probably like what, third fiddle for Bay Area newspapers,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Probably San Francisco Chronicle,
Oakland Tribune,
and then San Jose Mercury News, and maybe the Sacramento Bee after that. He also has in here, he also quotes the Napa Register in here too, which is the newspaper that my parents used to get from Napa, California. Napa's a really interesting town. There's a lot of weird stuff going on in that area as well because of the Napa State Hospital for the criminally insane. And that's not, and there's a lot of weird stuff up at Vacaville, the MDF, which is the medical detention facility, I think is what they call it. And that's where Charles Manson was for a long time. So as the Mercury News reported, by November 1987, the Army had received allegations of child abuse at 15 of its daycare centers and several elementary schools. There were at least two cases in Air Force daycare centers and another in a center run by the U.S. Navy. In addition, a special team of experts was sent to Panama to help determine if as many as 10 children at the Department of Defense elementary school had been molested and possibly infected with AIDS.
Jesus.
Yet another case emerged in a U.S.-run facility in West Germany. So it goes on and on. Same stuff.
Nationwide.
As with the Franklin case, the children and their parents found justice only through the civil courts. So they were never able to prosecute anyone, but maybe they were able to get some settlements as far as money goes, which isn't, I don't know.
Paul Benassi was awarded, I think, $1 million.
He won a civil suit against Lawrence E. King, but he never got any of it. The guy never paid a cent.
He's out walking around selling Mercedes.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess Michael Aquino died recently. He took his own life, so took the easy way out. And we can only hope that he will have to answer for his crimes eventually. Well, he probably already had to answer for him if he's
gone.
Yeah. So yeah, he killed himself in San Francisco, I think in 2019, something like that. What do you think, Deborah? We've gone about hour 20. Do you want to get through McMartin or do you want to call it?
Let's call it.
Okay, yeah, it's a tough subject.
It's kind of a...
Let's see. Next, we can do part two next week, and that will get us through the pedo stuff.
Yeah.
And then we can start getting into the part two. There's something about Henry, and I might start, maybe I'll start that over and I'll take better notes so we can like kind of stay on track a little bit better, or I'll at least brush up on it. And so what do you think? You like doing this even despite the subject matter?
Yeah, I do. I have to confess, I thought we were starting with Henry Lee, so I was more prepared for the Henry Lee Lucas stuff. I don't know why I thought we were going to start with him, but I'm glad we covered this first section.
Yeah.
Getting most of it behind us.
Yeah. And so guys, if you're got any questions, got any stuff that you know that we didn't cover that's not in Dave's book, let us know any important points. I think we should try to get through this book. And then, I'm on page 118. And then I got that book on the Ripper Crew. It's a short book. I want to go through that. Maybe we can do an episode on that. Okay. Meanwhile, we'll kind of still do the same format for the Patreon guests. And we're doing part two with Corey Hughes on Wednesday night at 5. You're welcome to join us. Ryan from Dangerous World's going to do it with us, and Ghost from My Third Eye. So you're welcome to come. We're going to talk about JFK, Israel, and what was going on in Germany and Poland in the 40s. And so that is definitely going to be behind a paywall.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah. So I'll send you a no pressure to come if you want to or not. Okay. I'll send you an invite. But guys, get in the Patreon if you want to hear that stuff. And thanks to everybody for listening and supporting. Please get out there, write us some reviews. And our numbers are way down. The show's just not growing. I think it's just really hard to grow a show nowadays because there's so many low-level conspiracy podcasts. So if we're not going to grow the show numbers wise, at least we can get in and do stuff that we want to do, and read books and talk about stuff that stimulates our mind. And it's really fun to look at it through this kind of new lens. It's not just like, oh, it's some crazy guys who killed a bunch of people. It's like, why did this happen?
We haven't even touched that yet. So
yeah. Have you watched that? Did you rewatch that Henry Lee Lucas Netflix doc?
No, I didn't.
You should take a look at that. It's pretty good.
I will.
They kind of take the...
I've seen it.
Yeah.
They even made a movie with actors about it.
Oh, Henry, the Portrait of a Serial Killer?
Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yeah, but that movie has nothing to do with the real case, and that guy isn't anything like the real Henry Lee Lucas. What's that actor's name?
Yeah. He was in Walking Dead. I can't think of his name.
Yeah, I forget his name. It's one of those guys, you'll know his face forever, but never know his name.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, cool. That covers it for today. Thank you, Deborah. I love you very much. And
thank
we
you,
will
Adam.
Talk
love
soon.
You. Yes.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
We're out. Bye.
Bye.